Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you all to the October 9th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Similarly, personal preference will not be the basis for any decision. And before we move into our agenda, Jonathan's going to say a few things, since I think there are a few of you that are joining us for the first time today, just to give you an idea of how the proceedings will occur. Jonathan.
Thank you, Karen. I just wanted to let any members of the public know who are here for the application for 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, new construction part one, demolition and recombination. Petition of Andrew Lynch, 24-004958. The applicant requested at the end of the day yesterday that this project not be heard today and be continued. The applicant has seen all the public comment, which we have posted, and the applicant is going back to the drawing board to work on the design. So if you're here for 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, that will not be heard today. No action will be taken. It will be back before this board, potentially at a future date. We don't know. But I just wanted to make sure that nobody sits here waiting for that application and it's not heard. So just make that clear. The second thing I just wanted to quickly touch on, which Karen noted, we did receive a great deal of public comment on three of the applications, the one I just mentioned, 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, as well as 301 Tatnall Street, as well as on 422 East Charleston Street. Just to quickly touch on 301 Tatnall Street, obviously a lot of the concerns about the scale, but I just wanted to make clear to the public, we also received quite a bit, I received numerous phone calls, emails from folks who were objecting to a new hotel being built on this site. Just so it's for the record, this board has no purview over the proposed use of a site. So whether they were proposing it to be a hotel, an apartment building, a casino, a supermarket, that does not fall within the purview of this board. So just want to make that clear for members of the public, because I know there are a lot of people here who I believe want to give public testimony about 301 Tatnall Street. And the last thing I would just say in terms of the public testimony for 301 Tatnall Street, when we get to the every member of the public who wants to speak will have the opportunity. We would just ask that if you are going to say the same thing that the previous speaker said, that you maybe just let the one speaker make that point. If you have a different point, you obviously all have the right to speak, but just to try to keep the meeting going. So just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you, Jonathan. Moving along, signposting, members of the board received packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. On the consent agenda item, we have the petition of Ward Architecture, file number 24-004938, COA for 140 Lincoln Street. We have the petition of Randall Sparks, file number 24-004937-COA, 412 East McDonough Street. The petition of Sotil and Sotil, file number 24-004952 for 705 Whitaker Street. The petition of Kobe Linton, file number 24-004946, 320 East Huntington Street. The petition of Barnard Architects, file number 24-000-4406 for 39 Barnard Street. The petition of Sawyer Design, file number 24-004964, 315 East Jones Street. The petition of Glenn Keys, file number 24-004700, 418 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Mr. Jones? Can you just state the item that you wish to move to the...
Yes, this might be a bit complex. My understanding is that there is a concern about a staff review, that this is the point in the agenda to also raise that. It's not on the consent agenda, but 311 East York Street is a window replacement, and I think that it's important to look at images of window replacements just to make sure that it's fine. I've asked for an image. I haven't been able to receive one yet from the staff. I may have absolutely no objection to it, but I can't know until seeing it. And I've
which
been
number
since
under
yesterday.
Staff review?
So I can give a little background on this.
It's 18.
Okay, and was that all, Mr. Jones?
Yes, that's all.
Okay, thank you.
And that one, just so you know, is for the proposed replacement of windows on the rear elevation facing the lane. The applicant first came in and said they wanted to use a composite material. Their argument was you could not see the windows from the lane. We went out and looked at it. You can see the windows from the lane. So they're replacing 6x6 wood windows with 6x6 wood windows. So it meets the standards.
Okay. And then from a procedural standpoint, if a member of the public has a question on a staff review.
Yeah, we're still working on how best to handle that. We don't normally have gotten questions on staff reviews. Your decisions on staff reviews, as I understand it, can be appealed to the zoning board, but we will provide Mr. Jones with, you know, the information related to that. But it's 6x6 wood windows on the rear elevation of a house, so we didn't think it was controversial.
Okay. Is there a member of the board that has a concern or would like further clarification of how to deal with this? Is everyone okay with Jonathan supplying the pictures and handling the review?
Madam Chairwoman, may I also note that in the staff decision...
Mr. Jones, if you're going to speak, can you please state your name for the record?
Yes, in the staff decision, it says that the staff decisions may be appealed to the Historic District Board of Review at its next scheduled meeting. So that is the last page of the staff decision, and that's simply why I'm here. So the decision itself says that I should be here today if I have a concern. I may have no concern, but I can't seem to see what the images are. And there have obviously been concerns about staff decisions in the past. If I could see the image, I would certainly withdraw any objection. I just can't see the image. This is the document, this MPC staff decision, which requires that any objection that I have be done here and now. I will submit that to the record.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Is this part of the consent agenda discussion?
It is not part of the consent agenda. It's a staff review.
Okay. Maybe we can talk
you'll,
about
you'll deal with the staff reviews, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Your objection is noted. Okay. So there were No objections and no projects that didn't have proper signs. Consent agenda, we read through all the items. There were no objections to anything on the consent agenda that needed to be moved to the regular agenda. And is that true for the public as well with consent agenda? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you. All those in favor? Any opposed? The consent agenda is approved. If your item was on the consent agenda, it has been approved and you are free to leave as you wish. All right, moving on to the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda?
Houle, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Is there a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the agenda is approved and is passed. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached. Is there a motion for approval of the September 11th minutes?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Is there a second?
Houle, second.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and has passed. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda, there are none. The continued agenda, these applications have been requested to be continued to the following meeting or a future meeting. We have several. We have the petition of Signs of the South, file number 24-004993, 110 East President Street. We have the petition of Andrew Lynch for 20-24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, file number 24-004958. Oh.
Just the two.
Just the two, with
lots of
attachments.
We put up all the public comments, so everybody can see.
All right. Is there a motion to continue the items as presented?
Higgins, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a second?
Houle, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. All those in favor? Any opposed? The motion to approve the consent agenda has been approved and passed. There are no requests for extension this month, so we will now move into the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide a comment if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time or for the first time in our audience, please make sure that you identify yourself and you have properly signed in for the meeting. If you are joining us electronically, I will be notified and I can call on you by name. Submit your name for the record so that you may comment, and we ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and try not to repeat previous comments or points already made. First up on the regular agenda is the petition of LS3P, file number 24-000-4957 COA for 301 Tatnall Street, new construction, part one, height and mass.
Yes, Chair, as stated, this is for 301 Tatnall. They're requesting approval of part one for a multi-story building. Historically, the site has been the residence of multiple homes that were converted into commercial structures. By 2003, three of these commercial structures were still standing on the property. They were demoed sometime between, two of the three were demoed sometime between 2007 and 2009. The final building was approved for demolition back in 2017 as part of another project that was similar to this one. Between 2017 and 2019, multiple applications for a multi-story building and for the demolition of that one remaining structure was heard by this board. There was a full history of all the conditions and whatnot as part of that staff report. That project was inevitably approved, but has since expired and was never constructed. The project, again, is currently located at 301 Tatnall. It's bordered by Tatnall Street, Liberty Street, and Jefferson Street. It's surrounded by a multitude of contributing and non-contributing buildings. Non-contributing buildings include the city's parking garage, as well as three hotels, as well as smaller, like, one-story structures. Contributing buildings include buildings that are anywhere from one story to three stories with a raised basement. Photos you see on the screen are some of the buildings immediately around the site. A full context description was provided as part of the staff report. The staff has three primary concerns with this project. The largest is the height of the structure. I do have one quick correction to the staff report. The staff report says the property is allowed for up to five stories. This property is actually split between the four-story zone in the height map and the five-story. So they could have up to five and six stories with the bonus story, which they do appear to me in this case, but staff still does have concerns about the overall height. Again, this is kind of a transitional period. So you do have some larger structures in the area, but again, that's the parking garage, that's pre-existing hotels. Those are non-contributing buildings and typically aren't considered when looking at new construction. The contributing buildings range anywhere from one story to three stories with the raised basement, which makes them four stories. So staff is recommending that either the entire building be lowered or at least a portion of it closest to the residential section be lowered to kind of help it transition into the residential space. Staff also has concerns about the rooftop deck area. Per the standards, pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade. So staff is recommending that either be completely removed or altered so that's not visible from the street. The final concern of staff is exterior expression of the top story. Per the standards, the exterior visual expression of the top story of buildings over three stories shall be distinct from the stories below. There is some differentiation between the top story and the lower ones, but it's not significant. The applicants should consider altering the design to meet the standard unless the board finds that this requirement is met or finds that the standard is not applicable given the structure will not be purely commercial in use. Staff has been talking with the applicant about the standard. That particular standard is quoted. It's found in the 7.8.10.B height within the standards. The applicant does not believe that standard applies given that they use the multiple volumes and roof-like variation standards within the large-scale development standards. Only two of those five massing standards are required to be used, but this standard is found outside that kind of reference point, and the applicant believes that the large-scale development standards do supersede other standards. So with that, staff is recommending a continuance for part one height and mass for the large scale development at 301 Tatnall Street to address the following concerns held by staff. The first is either to step down the eastern side of the structure or lower the structure entirely to be more visually compatible. Further differentiate the top of the structure of the building from the lower stories and to either remove the rooftop deck element or to redesign it to meet the standards.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Just one quick one.
And just make sure you identify yourself. Sorry.
Yes. Michael Higgins, Mike. I may have missed it. Is the Frawley Gourmet building, it's non-contributing?
Which building is it?
The Frawley Gourmet that's just to the east.
Is that the one story? That's non-contributing.
Okay.
Nagel, I do have a question. Can you clarify again one more time about the height on the clarification on the staff report for the justification of the extra floor being allowed?
Yeah, so within downtown districts, the height map for this area allows for a max of five stories or four stories. There's also an allowance for bonus stories. So if you meet certain criteria, you can have this bonus story. In the case of this application, they're going for LEED certification, and they're also making the majority of the first story to be a commercial use. So that triggers that bonus story, which allows for extra height.
Are any of the conditions for the bonus story related to the staggering of the upper floors or not at all. So, you know, instead of it being a solid mass, does the idea of it being staggered on the upper floors have any effect on having that bonus story?
So that the staggering of reform, that's a large scale development standard. So that's separate from whether or not they get the bonus story.
So it doesn't add to that. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Are there additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly.
And the applicant is here.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Michael Garcia representing LS3P. Thank you to staff and working with me and my team with regards to the different conditions and even throughout the submission process and review process. We are sympathetic to the conditions regarding height and some of the different understandings of what the rooftop deck would be. I have a couple of exhibits that I did want to walk through because I do want to clarify condition two regarding differentiation of the upper floor and then condition three regarding the rooftop deck. I do feel the conditions are a little bit ambiguous, so I would like a little bit more clarity. So hopefully the board could provide that. Regarding the top differentiation, so with the height map, as you guys know, there is along Liberty Street and Oglethorpe Avenue, it is a five-story height map. However, our site is bifurcated by a reduction to the four-story height map, and that happens right at the southern edge of the Liberty Lane right-of-way. So I have this exhibit here to show where that approximately happens within our site. Doesn't seem to want to scroll. So you'll see here this red dashed line, once it appears, right here indicates where the five-story height map decreases down to the four-story height map. So with regards to our large-scale development standards of allowing for a bonus story, that's where we were using as our line of demarcation for the sixth-story versus the fifth-story. With regards to the rooftop deck, our intention was to provide it along the six-story or along the five-story height map designation so that we could recess it from the exterior expression along Tatnall Street and give it a differentiating treatment such as storefront, have it be separate from the overall expression of the building. With regards to the condition number three, I did want to just ask there, we can interpret it a couple of different ways. I do have two separate documents or two like separate plans showing my interpretation and how I would kind of look at this in two different ways. One is we have on the lower floors for the fifth floor, we have three rooms in that location where the rooftop deck is located. We could definitely change that to be those three rooms and locate the rooftop lounge or bar somewhere within the hyphen of the building massing. The only issue that we found with that was that then it causes us to cross the line of the height map with because we need to provide access to those rooms through a corridor. Happy to make that change. I think that's we were trying to respect the height map in that regard. The other option that we were looking at, and this is something that we had discussed with staff too, is if the issue is the visibility along Tatnall Street is the main issue. This rooftop deck would never be visible from Jefferson Street or Liberty Street just because of how far south it is on the property. If we did change the orientation of it, that rooftop deck now starts to impede as well into the four-story height map. So we're not at a five-story or four-story plus one. We're now at a four-story plus two because of that roof deck. So some clarity on that would be really appreciated. I did also want to discuss the top floor differentiation. As you guys know, height and mass is regarding just building form and massing. We are not in the stages of selection of materials yet. So our intent was eventually to get into material differentiation to help distinguish that floor. However, that was not one of our prescribed uses with large-scale development because, as you guys know, base, middle, top as a massing strategy is selectively exclusive for residential use. So I did not want to use that as one of our strategies. However, our intent is to differentiate between those. As you can see, we do have a line of demarcation with a recess for the base spacing for the upper floor up to the fifth story. And then we would have a material change on the inset of the base spacing for the upper floor. This type of detailing would be similar on the portion of the building that's only five stories. So we would be continuing that. my understanding is, as part of the ordinance, it is about a material change. So my intent was that we would be providing that information in terms of a design detail for part two. So I would kindly ask that maybe that condition is removed from our continuance. And then also back to Kelly and I's discussion, I want to thank Kelly for being so welcome to discussing the ordinance and its form of interpretation. I did go through and I did want to like highlight what our findings were once we went through regarding the large scale development standards in congruence with the normal standards in the ordinance. Under 7.8.10, that is the portion where the ordinance describes subdividing the facade horizontally into base, middle, and top. The first story shall be separated from the upper stories by an architectural feature such as a string course, i.e. projecting horizontal band, or change in material. Such features may be placed at the top of the second story when the first and second stories have the visual appearance of a unified exterior expression. And if you scroll down, I snipped portions of our ordinance. Under large-scale development standards, it does say the large-scale development standards shall comply with the following. New construction on monuments buildings shall be exempt. Visual compatibility criteria, we meet section 7.8.9. In 7.8.9, describing visual compatibility, there is no reference to a base, middle, or top regarding the overall expression of the building exterior for the massing. And then it does say design standards 7.8.10. Should there be a conflict, the large-scale development standards shall take precedence. So in our interpretation, when we were doing our original massing study for the project, my understanding was if base middle top is only exclusively used for residential buildings as one of our massing strategies, we weren't going to designate it as our one of two massing strategies. However, I've also shown in the intent that we do intend to have some sort of differentiation material-wise. A building of that size with six stories or five stories on one side, I think, does deserve to have that, and that might help with the appearance and overall expression of the visual height. And lastly, I did want to talk regarding the overall height and the mass of the building. I know a few of you had questions regarding our 2017 and 2019 approvals for this project. The project was originally a project provided by Lynch. LS3P did take over the project. I was not involved in the project, but I do have records that I can use as before and afters to kind of illustrate the differences between what was originally approved and what we were submitting. And I do want to also say that I wanted to thank some members of the DNA for taking time yesterday to meet with us to go over some of their concerns. I know public comment is going to be a big part of our discussion today, which I welcome, and I welcome with any project. I also provide public comment when it's concerning my neighborhood. I do live in Ardsley Park. But I did want to discuss our attempts to physically lower the expression of the building while still being within the rights that we are allotted in terms of applying for a bonus story since it is large-scale development. So this exhibit, I can kind of show you. Here's our original submission on the bottom. This is what we submitted back in September. What you will see is that the overall building expression is at 72 feet and then 4 feet for a parapet, so it's at 76. The original submission, once it was approved, back in 2017, as you can see, this was the original same elevation. They were approved at an overall height of 69 feet. If you zoom in on the overall elevations, you can see all of the floor-to-floor heights are at 9 feet. Our floor-to-floor heights in our submission for this time around were at 10 foot 8, and then we did have a 12-foot floor-to-floor height regarding some initial planning for when we are going to be going for LEED certification. Providing pavers on the rooftop is going to be a big part of the accreditation process for us, and that's a way of being able to provide that without losing headspace within the rooms. I did want to discuss a little bit the differences in height and show you what our attempt at reducing that while still being able to do this was. We were originally approved at 9-foot floor-to-floor heights for this project, and as you guys know, once this project is approved from the Metropolitan Planning Commission, we do have the responsibility of continuing to design the project for our clients. The 9-foot floor-to-floor height, from my understanding, based off of previous architects that worked on this project, was probably the main reason why the project never continued, even with the pandemic. 9-floor floor-to-floor heights do not allow for any sort of mechanical equipment, any sort of electrical and plumbing coordination. You are thinking of a basic hotel room. 8 feet is probably the standard height for the room. With that, you're at less than a foot once you count the overall structure of the floor slab and those rooms. So they were left with a lot of issues and heartache regarding the ability to proceed with the project after its original approvals. However, that being said, I do want to also discuss that we are obviously sympathetic to the fact that we want to be able to lower the visual expression of this building. And by doing so, I did have a few exhibits showing how that looks. So again, this is another page showing the original submission that we had for September. And then this is our proposed change here. There we go. So that orange line is where the original building location was. And what I've gone ahead and done is I've reallocated some of the floor heights. I did lower all of the floor heights roughly by eight inches. And then also the top floor I lowered by a foot. I also removed a foot from our ground floor condition because I do think that we're still within the confines of meeting the required floor-to-floor heights on the ordinance. So now our building is sitting at 71 feet versus 76 feet. I do think there is an ability to reduce that even more. It's just going to take a little bit more than an exhibit for me to kind of get into the intricacies of the model for it. But we are at minimum reducing the building by 5 feet. I will say the tower for the parking deck next to us is at 74 feet and the top floor height is at 62 feet. So our fifth floor does meet the requirements of being roughly within that same compatibility. I know I would not say that this is compatible to a parking deck, but I do think that the height of it is relative to be discussed. And then I also did the same, with our north elevation here. This was the original north elevation. Visual compatibility, as we all know, it's a little bit tricky in this area or this ward because of the contributing structures. I am not going to be ignorant and say that a two-story building is visually compatible to a six-story building. I find that quite difficult to do. However, based off of the original submission and where we landed, our attempt in visual compatibility was through materiality, was through massing. That's why we use the detached volumes and roofline variation. It's 150 feet of property line along Tatnall Street, and we, I think, do a good job of breaking that up with the inclusion of a interior courtyard that we are using as part of our LEED accreditation as well. So now we have two separate masses with the hyphen connected, and it feels a little bit more in line with overall footprint massing, I would say. However, I did also want to discuss, you know, this is an ongoing issue with projects in the historic district. Oglethorpe Ave and Liberty Street are arterial roadways or gateways into Savannah, and they do have a five-story designation. And I did want to kind of discuss other projects within the neighborhood. I know the big concern is that it's a five-story and six-story structure next to a residential area. But I did want to discuss some other buildings in Savannah that have a similar character or similar composition. This is the Bank of Savannah building. Unfortunately, this building no longer exists. We now have the beautiful Truist Bank and parking garage located there. This is a 12-story structure next to buildings that are two stories. This is a commercial district, though, so I will say that it is a little bit different in that use. We do also have the Scottish Rite Masonic Temple, formerly, and now it is the SCAD building. It was built in 1920s. It is a six-story building, and it abuts along Charlton Street, three-story residences, similar to the three-story residences we have next to us. I do also want to call out the Duren building. It's now the Duren Plaza. It is eight stories, approximately 100 feet in height, and it does have three stories and garden-level apartments next to it on 6th East Liberty Street. 102 East Drayden, which is the Drayden Towers. They are 12 stories, approximately 118 feet, and their abutting properties are eight stories, one story, and two story. We also have the Lafayette Condominiums building built in 1928 with modifications for an underground parking deck. They are at approximately 67 feet tall, four stories, plus a mezzanine, plus a rooftop bar amenity. And the buildings adjacent to it are the Andrew Lowe House, two stories, Abercorn, 319 Abercorn, two stories, and 122 East Harris, three stories with a garden level. I can go through and name all of the other ones. We also do have within the historic district, 609 Abercorn Street, the Chatham, which is now SCAD dorms, 134 feet, 14 stories, buildings adjacent to it are four stories and three stories. What I'm trying to get at is that this isn't an atypical development pattern in Savannah. Quite contrary, Savannah was one of the first cities in the Southeast to ever have a high rise after 1897 with the first high rise in Chicago. And we were one of the first cities that pioneered this type of construction. Unfortunately, due to urban renewal and changes within the city infrastructure, that has no longer been as visible. But these buildings do still exist. I'll end with 106 West Gwinnett Street. We have a building that's 6 stories tall, approximately 71 feet, the proposed height that we will be meeting with the 6 and 5 story division of our building. And then the adjacent structures are 118 and 124 West Gwinnett Street. It's these series of townhomes. They are 3 stories. And then you have 799 Whitaker Street, which is the brick Victorian house here on the corner that's been abandoned for a few years now. That's 2 stories. I thank you, staff, for giving me the ability to discuss this and welcome any questions.
Does the board have questions for the applicant?
Can you repeat the overall height, 71?
Yeah, so we would be able to lower the building from 76 feet to 71 feet just with our initial analysis. I do expect that we would be able to change that slightly a little bit more to reduce the height even further.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Higgins, are you amenable to the staff request for continuation?
I'm amenable to it. I have no issue regarding the ability for continuance, but I do think that similar projects have been brought to the board regarding the same several conditions regarding height, visual expression, and they have been approved with those conditions. So I leave that to the discretion of the board, but I am amenable to a continuance.
Okay. If this is continued, do you have any thoughts under point one, especially the second part of staff's concern to lower the entire structure to be more visually compatible?
The issue I have with the first portion of condition one is that lowering just the eastern side of our building goes against our ability with the height map. We would have to readjust the massing to allow for what we lower there to be accommodated on the back end near Jefferson Street. If that is a form of being able to get approval, I think that we can certainly study that. My main issue with that is that it does break where the height map designates. We're allowed to build 6 stories with the inclusion of an additional bonus story.
I guess my last, it's not so much a question, but you realize that maximum number of floors are not minimums.
I know. I understand. I think you also realize that by right, they are allowed to at least apply for it.
Mr. Garcia, thank you for that explanation. And, you know, I appreciate the buildings that you gave as precedent and context for where we see this elsewhere within the historic district. Concerning buildings that you would consider that visually relate to this site in this plan, which buildings would you point to, contributing structures?
I would say, like I said, you can't point to a building based off of the relative height. I don't think a 2-story structure is able to be compatible in terms of height with a 6-story structure, obviously. What I did reference earlier is that I am comparing to the materiality. The building next to us is of a sort of brown brick finish, so we were looking at that. We also were looking at different buildings along Liberty Street, not directly behind us, but there are different apartment buildings that are of brick exterior finish, different stone finishes. So we were looking at that. We were looking at the way that the base spaces are broken out. The massing itself, I do believe, also relates to buildings such as the Durin or other buildings that do relate to some form of exterior relief along the pedestrian experience. So that's my answer. I unfortunately agree that you can't compare compatibility-wise with a 2-story or 3-story structure with a building like this.
Thank you. I appreciate that explanation. Were there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we turn it over to the public, I just wanted to, first of all, thank the applicant for providing the model, which I think you all have seen and members of the public can come up and see. And just to emphasize what Mr. Higgins just said, the height map gives you a maximum. That does not mean that you have to approve a 6-story building. You could say a 3-story building is appropriate or a 4-story building or 5-story. It's up to you. But again, that's a maximum. It's not a minimum. So he said it better than I could have.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Okay, we'll start from this side of the room and move this way. And just make sure when you come up, you state your name for the record and that you have signed in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC agrees with staff recommendations of a continuance with the three conditions listed. We recognize that the design of this building will impact and set a precedent for the new construction that will take place across the street at the Civic Center site. In agreement with staff's first concern, the proposed height is not visually compatible with the surrounding contributing context, especially the residential structures to the east. In agreement with number three of staff's concerns, the current placement of the rooftop closer to the residence versus being placed within the hyphen of the building or facing Liberty is something that should be taken into consideration. Additionally, we would appreciate further study of the courtyard into actual usable space for the community and pedestrian engagement versus only being used as entry space into the hotel. As a general statement, developers and architects working in Savannah have a civic responsibility to design buildings that are unique and respectful to Savannah's historic fabric and integrity versus a design that looks as if it could be anywhere in the country. We as a community and you all as members of the review board must demand better instead of worrying that our standards will cause less development. The right people will not be deterred by this and see this as a challenge to create better, more compatible designs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Sir.
My name is Robert Helms. I live at 244 East Oglethorpe Avenue, and I have a couple of sort of generic questions. First, I'd like to thank petitioner for pointing out that all of the taller buildings that exist in the city of Savannah were built sometime before there were any ordinances, and therefore they shouldn't be really used as reference points for visual compatibility or any other purpose because they predate anything like that. Secondly, they point out that the risk we have in Savannah is that there will be a plethora of 5- and 6-story buildings, and these 5- and 6-story buildings, while they may only be 60 feet or 70 feet, they're still vastly huger in scale than the things that surround them. We live across the street from the new building at 302 East Oglethorpe Avenue, and that building is technically 5 stories, but visually it's a lot bigger than anything around it. Now, the reason the ordinance, people think about these ordinances as being there to deter builders from doing things. I actually look at them as being there to protect the members of the MPC and the Historic District Review Board from criticism for turning stuff down. Because if it's, you turn it down because it doesn't, it's not visually compatible or it doesn't meet the ordinances, people can't come up to you and say, you screwed me. So I think that we have not only this building, but 2024, you know, they're very large scale, massive buildings. And, you know, the developers go on the basis of taller, wider, denser, because that's where the money is. Now, that doesn't mean if you make them smaller and less dense that they're not going to make any money. It just means they're not going to make as much. So with that, I urge you to continue this and to actually think about how big, I mean, the more big buildings you permit, the more they're going to be all over historic Savannah. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jones.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I agree with the prior two speakers. We are opposed to this project on a number of grounds, and of course, the first being the height. It is simply not visually compatible. Thank you, Mr. Higgins and Jonathan, for explaining that the maximum is not minimum. In the, right here in the guidelines, height, new construction shall be permitted to build to a number of stories as in the height map. Yes, that includes bonus floor. So that's half of it. But the other half, it says and. So it's got to meet both of these conclusions. And the overall height and the height of the individual components of the structure shall be visually compatible to the contributing buildings and structures to which it is visually related. In addition to height, you need to look at the dominant cornice line of the facades along the street. And you can see here's the McCorkle Johnson building immediately next door. It's a three-story building, and the cornice line is at that level, just far different from what is being proposed. If you obviously look down Tatnall Street, all of these buildings are three-story buildings, and the proposed hotel would be approximately where that large red thing is. And as Mr. Helms said, these large buildings are dominating our landscape. Once you go above four stories, you're above the tree canopy, and a large building can be seen from many, many blocks away. This will be visible from Pulaski Square. They're trees, but you're going to see pieces of it peeking out. And here's Pulaski Square, and the purple are the contributing buildings, and the yellow are the non-contributing. And look at these buildings. They're 3-3-3-3-3-2-2-2-3-3. I mean, the dominant height in this area is 3. You have an obligation to provide the visual, to apply the visual compatibility rules, and this building just simply does not comply. This is, frankly, one of the simplest and easiest decisions you should have to make this year. One thing I would also point out is that it's not doesn't pass visual compatibility in terms of the pattern of solid and voids. And part of that is caused by this bonus floor. When you add the bonus floor, you're supposed to put these commercial spaces on the ground floor of lots of glass. Well, this is a residential neighborhood. These houses don't have masses of glass and doors. It's not commercial. So this also, this pattern of the void, solids and voids is not met by this building. As Mr. Helm mentioned, the historic examples that he cited when the area was designated, none of them went through a visual compatibility test. They were just buildings that had merit that there was no reason to tear down. But no one ever said that any of those buildings was visually compatible with the building next door. That was not the basis of any type of designation. So those buildings just have no relevance to your decision today. Yes, they're beautiful buildings and they're wonderful, but that's just not part of the decision that you need to make. You simply need to make a decision of whether this building is visually compatible in terms of height and whether it's visually compatible in terms of the massing relative to the contributing buildings that are nearby. So on the model where there are large buildings, those are all the non-contributing buildings. It's the short buildings that are the contributing buildings that you need to look at. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. First, I just want to say that I know that public opinion is not something that's specifically required to be taken into consideration, but I hope that it gives you at least a hint that there's a large number of people who think that this is not visually compatible, and I would hope that that would be something you take into consideration in your analysis. But I really want to focus on one specific issue. We, of course, appreciate all the hard work that staff does, and I want to thank them for that. We believe, though, that there are fundamental flaws in the staff report and that it doesn't adequately address the requirements of the ordinance. Some of this was alluded to by Mr. Jones. To refresh everyone's recollection, the ordinance requires that new construction meet the visual compatibility criteria, which are not appealable, and one of those criteria is related to height. I think we're all familiar with those requirements. What the staff report misses, or at least gets confused, is that regardless of whether the proposed number of stories fall within the height map, and I'll read the specific language of the ordinance here. The overall height of a building and the height of individual components of a building or structure shall be visually compatible to the contributing buildings and structures to which it is visually related. And visually related is defined as buildings and structures that are within view of the proposed structure. And greater weight is placed upon adjacent historical buildings and structures. Now, that means that there's only one very limited category of structures that the proposed structure needs to be visually compatible with. contributing buildings that are within view of the proposed building. Everything else is simply irrelevant. All of those precedents that he described are, it might as well be in Manhattan. And as one of the other speakers pointed out, they were, I believe, all built before the ordinance was enacted. And after all, would you at this point approve the SCAD dormitory where it is? I mean, it's simply not a precedent for any of this analysis. And yet the staff report refers to the parking garage, the civic center, and a couple of hotels. Their own site diagram, which is in your package, I believe, shows what is actually the only relevant data. 7 contributing buildings with 2 stories, 10 contributing buildings with 2.5 stories and a raised basement, and only 1 contributing building with 3 stories. And the only adjacent contributing buildings, which you will recall get greater weight, are 2.5 stories. Those are collectively the only structures you can take into consideration when you do your visual compatibility analysis. The only structures, everything else is outside of the ordinance. And based on that, I defy anyone to say that a 6-story hotel is visually compatible with contributing structures that are a maximum of 3 stories.
Mr. Edwards, if you could wrap up your comment.
So there are similar issues with respect to the other visual compatibility criteria, but height is probably the one that's most relevant here and the most that's clearly violated. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Ms. Adler.
Thank you to you all. I'm Sue Adler, the CEO of Historic Savannah Foundation. I'm not going to talk about the building. I'm going to talk about something else, which probably isn't in your purview, but I feel strongly needs to be on the record. I think we all have to stop and think, when is the day when we have too many hotels in this town? And I think that's something that we should be asking our city leadership to address. And I think the time is now to have that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adler.
Hi, I'm Anna Bliss, and I'm the operations manager at the Beehive Foundation. Our president, Gary Arthur, is traveling and has asked me to read this brief statement on our stance on this project. Many of our citizenry already refer derisively to our national landmark design area as the hotel district, not the historic district. We believe the height and mass plans before you were only visually compatible with the massive Liberty Street parking garage, with the long derided civic center we hope about to be taken down, thankfully, and with the 3 other recent hotels abutting one another in our neighborhood, all within a block or two of 301 Tatnall Street. This project bears no visual relation to any of our true contributing structures, the ones you are mandated to use as your starting point when evaluating new building projects. The actual historic buildings of Pulaski and Currytown wards are in fact dwarfed by this hotel, what would be our 4th intrusively large hotel. If your starting point is the wealth of visually contributing historic structures in this neighborhood, we do not see how you could in good faith give your approval on visible compatibility grounds. We urge you to require the petitioner to come up with a building of considerably reduced scale.
Thank you, Ms. Bliss.
Susan Atkinson, 301 East Charlton Street, and maybe I'll practice more and get better. Anyway, I'm glad there seems to be respect for homeowners and Savannah residents who came here first, and a lot of them are here. There's always, I would say, a massive parking garage right next door that's within sight. And if you go around Savannah, the buildings that were used as precedents, there are mass tall structures that dot and punctuate our city. And actually, if we didn't have any, it'd probably be pretty boring to have them all the same height throughout the entire city. So they add interest, but they don't dominate. There's a balance about this, those big buildings. It's the same mass in that it's one structure tall and big, but then all the rest of it is, there are smaller structures greater in number that balance the mass of one big building.
my point is we have a massive car garage. We have the Civic Center, whatever will happen to that. We have the other hotels. You add another mass building, it throws it out of balance. And, I mean, I'll just take this over. It reminds me of my bathroom when I bought the house. And I am going to, about to change it. When you walk in, you feel like it's tipping because there's so much stone and weight in that one corner balanced by a little pedestal sink and a toilet. So I will be changing that. And I think that's the whole point is let's keep Savannah balanced. Limit the hotel in height and its mass. Don't have a rooftop. Respect the homeowning, tax-paying, important citizens and residents of Savannah, and manage commercial growth in a balanced way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Atkinson. Ms. Woods?
Artis Wood. The footprint for this and all buildings, please require that the footprint allow for a proper size block frame that will accommodate a generous foot sidewalk and tree lawn with trees on all fronts. Just look at the wall of buildings on Victory Drive between Whitaker and Barnard to see how cold and unsightly it is without these things. And the height. Of course, revisit the new apartments across from the police headquarters at Habersham and Oglethorpe. They are five stories. To put this plus one more on Tatnall, even set back, would be so overpowering as to dwarf all around. And clearly, it is incompatible with the surroundings. I'm hearing about a rooftop bar. You say, well, you don't pick what goes there, except we saw Tapestry Hotel on the design that was shown by the developer. So it's certainly a possible hotel. I'm thinking of Homeward Suites on Bay Street at the East End. They have a rooftop bar, and they have TV screens and live music and all kinds of things that just are an anathema to a residential area. And now I would like you to do something with me. Visualize yourself in your own home, perhaps the living room. There's the closet for the coats. There's the front door. Got it? Many of you might live next to other houses along your street. You know your neighbors and they know you. You take care of one another. You feel comfortable and safe, and you can justify paying what you did to live there. Can you see that? Can you feel it? Then one day, perhaps a hotel goes up at one end of your block. Different people come and go every day at all hours in and out of over 100 rooms. Noise, parking, and traffic increase many fold. The quality of the life you thought you bought into has changed irrevocably. This developer might well make a good profit, but the residences along your street will drop in value, and getting a tax adjustment downward is of little consolation. So look at this proposed building. Unlike the adjacent homes, it could be any place USA. Please reject it as is shown. Please do not diminish our landmark historic district with such a structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. I'm Lori Broyles. Just for some context, this is my first time appearing here. I'm relatively new to Savannah. Coming from Atlanta is my new adopted home after several years of searching, spending time between Savannah and Charleston, and we finally settled on Savannah. And a big part of that reason was because of the beautiful Oglethorpe plan, the scale, less development than Charleston, we thought, and knowing your neighbors, as was just pointed out. But another thing I want to point out is that I'm the owner of two of the contributing structures that should be considered in your analysis, and they've been shown in photographs today, 333 Tatnall Street, so I'm just one block down from the proposed development, and 331 Barnard. Ms. Bliss, who spoke on behalf of the Beehive Foundation, Beehive owns three of the contributing structures, so they're represented here today. And another contributing structure is recommended by the homeowners there in the corner. I'm not sure if they'll speak. Their comments, I'm sure, would be largely duplicative of mine, but we are encouraged by what we've heard here today. Thank you to the staff for their recommendation. We definitely appreciate the sensitivity to the contributing structures and, you know, narrowing the focus of this analysis to what should be considered. I appreciate your sensitivity already that I've heard in asking for more information about the large-scale development that was presented to you as if it has any bearing on this discussion. So we are encouraged by what we hear. We like what we're hearing. We appreciate the staff's efforts and everyone who has turned out to show support for what we feel is a wonderful, intelligently designed community, designed hundreds of years ago. And I think we all owe it to those early urban planners to continue with this intelligent design. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Royals. Welcome to Savannah. Is there somebody else that wishes to speak? Yes, sir.
This is David Longwood. I live at 327 Tatnall. We're the first residential house south of this property. Our front door and their front door would be about 300 feet apart. It's massive. This property is massive. We moved here from Houston to get away from massive buildings, to retire and enjoy the historical Savannah. I used to be in the hotel development business and my career. I understand this hotel. The Tapestry is a Hilton. I built several Hiltons. And I see problems architecturally with the building based on what we used to do, but that's neither here nor there. My main concern is this building is huge compared to the surrounding neighborhood. And I find it offensive. And when I walk out my front door, the image that they showed earlier of how it would set on the horizon is obnoxious. It's just too big. It needs to be lower. I don't have a problem with a hotel per se. It just needs to be smaller and less massive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Longwood. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? Just restate your name for the record.
Yes, thank you. Michael Garcia with LS3P. Like I said, we welcome all of the public comments, and we certainly are sympathetic to that. As I mentioned to Mr. Higgins earlier, we are amenable to a continuance, and we do hope to continue working with this issue regarding the height on with several members from the DNA, with HSF, with any group that's interested to do it. So. Just wanted to say that. Oh, and one more thing. I didn't include those tall buildings because I think that they relate to my building compatibility-wise or any of that. I do find the comment that they were built before an ordinance to be particularly funny because we referenced those buildings in our ordinance as part of the visual compatibility criteria. However, I mentioned them because it does show a distinct pattern of different variants or different varied heights within residential neighborhoods and different residential wards, like Ms. Atkinson had mentioned earlier, does add a certain dynamic to the overall urban fabric. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. At this time, we will enter into a board discussion and no further public comment will be had. Jonathan?
Just one quick thing without telling you what to do. But I think it would be helpful, whatever you decide to do, to provide Michael and his team with some clear guidance in terms of the image we have before you, you know, how tall do you feel would be visually compatible? I think would be very helpful for Michael to hear from you today in terms of overall height or stories, however, if that's something that is of concern to you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Houle, I will start with you for board discussion.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. When I first saw this one, I actually went to my dictionary and looked up the word behemoth, behemoth, as defined in the dictionary, is a chaos-causing monster. I don't know that I have to say a whole lot more about it, but to give some specifics, per the request of staff, when this comes back for maybe the second review of height and mass, the height part, 3 to 4 stories looks like what would be something that I could look at. Certainly 5 to 6 is too much of a behemoth.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Rowan.
So I know you're referencing some of the older buildings in town, and the majority of them are so aesthetically beautiful. And this building does look like a building that you would see anywhere. And I think it's important when you're doing a project like that to go to those buildings that are there and maybe, you know, architecturally make it similar and more visually pleasing. And I mean, I could see 6 stories for that area is, I think, a lot. So.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Higgins.
Looking at the model, I think the model says it all. Obviously, I support the continuance, but I cannot stress more the importance of concern number one, because it is not a 6-story minimum. I think this is just by far too tall and too massive for the site.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel.
I do think there's a few issues going on here that all the members of the public that spoke added beautifully to the conglomerate of problems that we have with this one. One of them is the too many hotels. Thank you, Sue Adler, because that is not within our
purview. Ms. Nagel, I would just remind you.
Right, but I'm coming to that. Thank you, Karen. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Thank you. Yes, that is not within our purview. However, it does add, because it is a hotel, it does add to that sense of we need to look more at the design and the scale and the mass of it, because it is not contributing to the residential area. It is contributing as a hotel. So I think that that helps to separate a little bit on why we need to look closer to the design of it. I think that the height is definitely out of proportion with the contributing structures. And I appreciate Mr. Garcia pointing out how he's meeting all the ordinances and where he is, because that is important. I think you did a great job with that. But the one hole we have is the reality that we have to stick with the fact that the contributing structures are the ones that count. And those are within visibility of what we're looking at. So we just had a similar petition recently where I stood my ground and saying, if you can't see these from the where this building is, they don't count. And the non-contributing ones count. The parking garage is obviously very similar in material and height, but it doesn't count. So we have to stick with what counts. Therefore, the 3 to 4 stories of what we're looking at in the Sanborn maps of what was originally there is what counts, and I think is what we should stick to as a visual compatibility factor for this one. And then I do agree with Ms. Rowan in that the design of it would help, because people come to Savannah for something that looks like Savannah and architecturally adds. I think this building, from a design perspective, aesthetically, it does not meet the visual compatibility either. So I agree and I support a continuance of this.
I'm going to add my comments just for the benefit of the petitioner asking for some clarification. I think, you know, trying to apply for, you're certainly within your right to apply for a bonus story. I think given the context of the neighborhood, I would probably rethink that. I don't think there is an appetite, at least of my own opinion, to look at this from that context and from that standpoint. I do also just want to remind my fellow board members and the members of the public that this is a part one hearing, so we're looking at height and mass. This is not where we address specific design elements. They have not been proposed, and that is not what we're here reviewing today. It's just height and mass. And again, just for the record, the use of the building and whether or not it's going to be a hotel, a private residence, a condo, a commercial business, is not and should not be a factor in this decision. So again, I just want that on the record and to remind everyone of that. And Mr. Houle, I'll go back to you.
No more comment.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel?
I think to Jonathan's point, if we are to clarify to get somewhere with this in the continuance, because obviously that is seems to be the consensus, definitely the height, you know, if we come back and then we see a continued project with the same height, I mean, it's just going to, you know, the height is a big one here. So if that could be worked into more compatibility with the surrounding buildings, I think that would be a huge plus. Thank you.
All right. My final comment would be I appreciate the applicant's willingness to hear and respond to public comment. And a suggestion might be to hold a meeting to discuss these before coming back with a design so that feedback can be taken into consideration. Because I know that you're a good neighbor. So that would be my final suggestion. And at this point, I will entertain a motion.
I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue case 24-004957 COA 301 Tatnall Street for a period of not to exceed 90 days so that the three concerns of staff as listed can be considered.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There's a motion on the floor to continue the petition for a period of 90 days to consider the three staff conditions. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right, the motion to continue is approved for a period of 90 days.
Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, excuse me, that 90 days, just to, for the record, we need to be date certain, is January the 22nd. Of 2025.
Okay, thank you. Do we need to amend the motion or just note it in the minutes?
I would amend it just so that it's really clear that there's a date certain. It does a couple things for us. It helps us with regards to advertising it. And it lets the public know that there's a date certain in which this is going to come back to this board. Just
period not to exceed 90 days.
No, but you can't do a not to exceed. It has to be date certain. So if it has to be date certain. You can't say not to exceed.
We've done it in the past.
I wasn't in here. I probably would have told you the same thing if I was. It has to be date.
What is
certain.
The Melanie? What is the date?
It's January the 22nd, 2025. And that's all you have to do is just to keep the same motion, just to kind of add that date to that motion.
No, I think they can.
I will amend my motion. To replace not to exceed 90 days to a period not
later than
not greater than January 22nd, 2025.
Okay, the amended motion on the floor is to continue the petition to allow the petitioner to address the three staff conditions to a date not to exceed January 22nd, 2025. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
The amended motion carries, and that petition is continued. Next up on the regular agenda is the petition of Homeline Architecture, file number 24-004954, COA for 422 East Charlton Street, rear elevator addition.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. The applicant's requesting approval to install an elevator addition on the rear elevation of 422 East Charlton Street. So just to kind of show an overview of the project, some site context photos, site plan showing the proposed addition, the proposed demo plans. And materials and sight lines. Also, just wanted to put some existing perspective photos out there too, just from the staff site visit, and then just doing a wider Google Street View from either Haversham or Price Street looking down towards it. And then just for a little context, this is part of eight connected row homes constructed in 1882 and known as McDonough Row. It's a contributing resource. The entire row has an easement from the historic Savannah Foundation. Easement properties must first obtain approval from HSF prior to applying for a certificate of appropriateness, and the applicant has done this before they applied and met with us. In the 1960s, the property was part of two rows of 19th century houses that were saved and privately restored using Federal Housing Authority loans as part of an urban renewal program. The Georgia Historic Resources Survey Sheet notes that alterations were made to the buildings in 1950, 1968, 1972, and an extensive renovation of all units in 1988. Other specific details of the work were not provided in that report. The proposal also does include the removal of three windows, one on each floor. Staff found the current windows could date likely to the either 1972 or 1988 rehabilitations based on observation from the street and from old photos. When comparing the current configuration of the rear elevations of the row to a photo from late 1960s prior to the restoration, one thing that stands out is that the third story windows within the blind arches changed from a window pairing to a single window. So you can kind of see, it may not look as good blown up, but you can kind of see how this, there were double windows in here. The narrow side window openings were not closed off in contrast to the faux window seen on most of the units currently, or not at all in a few cases. These details give the impression that the rear configuration has been changed quite a bit during the restorations that occurred in the late 20th century. While removing the these windows themselves, the windows that are not historic would not be eliminating historic materials. The window sills and a portion of the masonry on each level would also be removed to accommodate the openings needed for the proposed elevator. Staff finds this is the minimal amount of removal required for the project, and that overall the stucco and scoring on the wall could would remain intact. Even though this is a largely a renovation of the original, the historic character still exists and would not overall be completely destroyed. There's some overlap with the visual compatibility criteria and the addition criteria. So that's one of the things is the scale, the height, mass, and scale of the addition. So in this case, we're looking at whether something is going to overpower the resource. The addition does not overpower the rear elevation and stays below the roof line with that cornice detail and brackets. So I found that was met, and that the addition criteria was met. There was one of the criteria is to not obscure or damage any character defining features. And as mentioned, the overall scoring with the scored block on the stucco nor the blind arch area, you know, though had changed it somewhat will remain in place. And that seems to carry most, aside from the front of the building, has most of the character defining features. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request to install an elevator addition right through here. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, sorry. Approve the request to install an elevator addition on the rear elevation of 422 East Charlton Street as requested because the project is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff?
I did have one question.
Mr. Houle.
Houle. Can you go back to one of the pictures of the backs of all the buildings together?
Did you want the historic one or one of the modern day pictures?
Modern day. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Are there any other on this long row? I don't see them, but I'm asking. Are there any other projections out of the back of any of these other buildings, or is this a flat all the way down these units?
Yeah, it's flat all the way down. There's currently no other projections.
Okay, thank you.
Higgins, quick question. Did you have any discussions about bringing the elevator inside the footprint of the building?
Well, we had talked about that with the applicant just in our initial meeting. And since that's not something we could recommend not doing interior work, I think they had their own reasoning for not doing it. And if you wanted to check with the applicant, that's probably more of a question for them. But, you know, we did initially when we met say, had you looked into this? And they did.
Caitlin, just for clarification, I know it came up in some of the public comment that was already submitted. The windows that will be obscured by the elevator, in your findings, that does not constitute a loss of historic material or?
Well, we found that the windows themselves are not part of the original windows. I mean, as you can see in some of these pictures, there's no windows in some of these openings. But also there's different windows in a lot of these buildings on the rear too. However, the applicant has noted that regardless of that, they are storing these on site in the attic and also are doing the same with the masonry work that would be removed. And I think reviewing this as an addition, there's certainly going to be some removal of material in a lot of cases of additions. And we just found this was a minimal amount. That was also probably restuccoed in the 80s.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there additional questions for staff?
One more, but this is probably more so to Jonathan. I had asked you at one point about, I remember some years ago there was an elevator being proposed for a building on Abercorn. I don't remember the street. Right across the street from the dry cleaners, across from the Chatham Tower, where it was the same issue as putting an elevator shaft on the back of the building. And I could not remember, but I think the board turned it down and I was curious as to their reasons.
We may have to look into that.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. We'll have to do a little more digging on that. The one thing I would like to note quickly before turning it over to the applicant, we did really receive quite a bit of public comment. We always thank the public for being involved. There was some concerns raised from people who called me, emailed me also, you know, is the owner of this property doing this just to sell the property? We can't get into any of that. We have no review or authority over who owns the property, what they want to use for the property, what their motivations, do they need an elevator because they're disabled, are they older? That does not weigh into any of our decisions. We're looking purely at the ordinances that are related to a proposed addition. So I just want to make that clear.
Thank you, Jonathan. Sounds like we need a public workshop. Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Eric O'Neill. I'm with Homeline Architecture. I just want to thank the staff for the very thorough review of the project and just reiterate that before we came to you all here, we did work with HSF as they do have the facade easement on the entire row. And through several meetings and feedback from them, we were able to come to a design that they were comfortable with. And we do have their formal approval to move forward with it as it's designed. I understand there's going to be some public comments that I would am happy to address at that time. But if any of you have any questions of me, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Yes, Higgins. Have you worked with your client about moving the elevator inside the footprint of the building?
We did. We started with that. When she hired us, it was to do an assessment of the property to find an adequate location for it. We were trying to incorporate it inside. And if I can, you have the floor plans here. Just with the layout and the size of this house, we were struggling to find an adequate spot that this could work without, you know, doing or destroying the layout of the floor plan. And in doing the elevator and the interior, it would actually end up taking out more historic fabric. We'd be losing floor structure, ceiling structures, moldings, you know, crown moldings, baseboards, and that stuff. She has the right to build an addition onto this property. It's within the ordinance, and we felt that this was the most appropriate design solution for it.
Any additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. O'Neill.
Okay, thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment?
Ellie Isaac, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. As previously stated, HSF does have an exterior preservation easement on this property. The property on Cohen Row was part of the Troop Trust Urban Renewal Project in 1961, which was one of the first bigger initiatives that HSF undertook through our revolving fund. I directly worked with the architect, and our ARC agreed to approve this addition as it's being presented to you today. The elevator is small and on the rear facade, which is the least invasive location and is easily reversible. The elevator is utilizing existing window openings, resulting in minimal historic material being removed, and the window and masonry being removed will be salvaged. The elevator's height is set below the cornice line, is finished with stucco to match the original building, but is not scored to create a false sense of history. This project utilized page 11 of Preservation Brief 32, which is titled Making Historic Properties Accessible. It meets all Secretary of Interior standards, design standards, and is visually compatible. I would like to share with you that HSF, that within HSF, we are having robust discussions regarding increasing accessibility and accommodating those with accessibility concerns to historic buildings. And I would implore the community to do the same. That's all I have. Does anybody have questions for me before I leave?
Thank you,
Ms.
Isaac.
Since we do hold the easement. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak?
I have a presentation. Andrew Jones, Chair of the Oak Floor Plan Coalition. This is a really classic Savannah Street. As mentioned, it was part of a major project, and I had friends and relatives who were involved in that and lived on that both those rows for generations. And this really is going to ruin the look. I mean, here's Macon Street, and on the left are the subject properties. They have very consistent facades consisting of an arch, and with a window on each side. That arch likely was an inset sleeping porch that later got double windows in and then later got a single window. But the arch is still there. These other window openings, the openings are original. So we are talking about destroying the window configuration there and altering a facade. And these facades are consistent. And it's also important that they're beautiful facades that are consistent on the other side of the block. So right now you have two perfect rows facing each other. This does not meet the Secretary of Interior standards. The Secretary of Interior has specific standards to require the respecting of the uniformity of rows of townhouses. You're not supposed to approve change to one house in a row when all the others are in conformity with each other, even if those changes would have been okay by themselves if that were a standalone house. That is in the Secretary of Interior standards. Also, this is visible from a right-of-way. I mean, these houses are a little bit odd. They don't actually have a rear facade. They've got a front entrance with a stair, and then they have another facade that faces a right-of-way, a street. So they're highly visible. So this elevator isn't facing a lane like some of the other elevators we've seen. It is facing a street, and it's interrupting the flow of, you know, one of the most beautiful, one of the most perfect blocks in the city. Notice the architect has not given you a perspective mock-up, but it's going to be something like that. I mean, it's just going to ruin the flow, ruin the look. This also violates the rules for additions. Okay, it says they should not be on the front facade and that they have to be located to the rear, but these buildings don't really have a rear. They've got two facades. Additions shall not obscure or damage any character-defining features. Well, they do. They change those windows openings, and maybe the windows have changed. I think in Savannah, most people have changed the windows over the course of 150 years, but they replace them with appropriate windows and stay within the window surround. And then we get to this concept of reversible. And before I and there, nothing is reversible if it can't be reversed. But let's just jump to, I mean, you can see there are lots of interior elevators now. Technology is so different. You don't need a lot of space. I mean, these things are occupying maybe 2 by 2 feet. You know, people put them in their living rooms and other places. That was a pretty big floor plan. There are closets. There are plenty of places there. I just don't think enough of an effort has been made to find an alternative location. But here's an issue that affects this building and many others and some of your former decisions. An alteration is not reversible if it will never be reversed. No proposal should be approved because it's reversible until the HDBR has worked with the city attorney to determine that a reversible change can actually be reversed one day. I mean, these add value to the building. They're not going to be taken off unless there's a mechanism. And how that mechanism works is something that you have to work out with the city attorney. It would be something like the owners agreeing to sign an agreement with the city whereby the owners covenant that upon sale of the property, the elevator shaft will be removed and the building restored. If they're serious about it being reversible, let's get serious. Covenant runs of the land, applies to successors and assigns, recorded on the deed. Otherwise, as mentioned before, the owners get approval for this. It increases the value of the house. It decreases the value of every other house in the area. So if you approve this, you're taking money from the other owners, and you're giving that money to one owner. And then the owner can sell the house tomorrow. And if they do it, someone else will do it, someone else will do it, and you simply ruin not just this block, but a lot of downtown Savannah. So please reject this this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. I just want to remind the board and the public that property values, whether they add, subtract, deter, are not a basis for decision and certainly not within the purview of this board. Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Steve Edwards, representing the DNA. We object to the proposed addition to this building. We think that it spoils the consistency of the facade. I'm very sympathetic to the idea of having an elevator in a downtown house. My house is three stories. But I'm also worried about the precedent that it sets. Lots of people want elevators on their houses, and this is a very visible one, so I think it'd be hard to turn down future requests as a result. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Yes, ma'am.
Susan Atkinson, 301 East Charlton Street. I agree with everything that was said, and I also oppose it.
but I wanted to ask a couple of questions. Is there a way, I mean, my preference would be not to have it because it breaks up the facade, but if it's going to be approved, can there be restrictions on the depth and the material? Because that would, if it was all glass, that would not break it up as much. If it was more into the house and not be 6 feet, but only 3 feet out, it wouldn't break it up as much. So I just wanted to plead that if you do approve it, again, I don't agree with it, but if it is approved, if you could consider things that would reduce the impact on breaking up the whole open pattern.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Peter Paolucci, and I live at 416 East Charlton Street in the historic McDonough Row. I would like to share some thoughts with you about the detrimental prospect of granting a permit to a three-story elevator to be built on the outside of the rear of the historic property located at 422 East Charlton Street. This construction of this three-story elevator on the rear one of the units of the John J. McDonough Row, an eight-unit townhouses that were built in 1882, would be a disgraceful alteration of this elegant 142-year-old property, Italian style, not to mention the quality of life on the 400 block of East Macon Street. And it's a special street, a street where the back of our houses go up against the front of other houses, and we congregate out there. It's an extension of Troop Square. The shaft will stick out over 6 feet of the rear of the property, will be approximately 30 feet tall, and will occupy over 1,000 cubic feet of space and have a significant deteriorating effect on the impact of the visual quality of the entire eight-unit McDonough Row. The removal of the three windows will significantly alter the appearance of the building. And two other units in the row have elevators inside the building, including mine. So why can't they do the same thing? They have looked at it. They've come to my house. They've looked at my elevator, and then they have decided to ruin our properties by putting it outside. Not to mention how disruptive such a large project will be on the quality of life of the properties alongside of 422. In addition, those properties across East Macon Street will face this major project, have a deteriorated view across the street, as well as a negative impact of their entire quality of life. This is a major project which will require removal of debris from taking out the windows, as well as significant material being brought in to erect the elevator, which will increase the traffic. In addition, the workers will occupy the parking, all of which will significantly impact quality of life for the residents who back up or face the 400 block of East Macon Street. I was seriously disappointed because I believe the Historic Savannah Foundation has control over what can do to alter the facade of this historic property. The restrictive covenant held by the Historic Savannah Foundation has prevented past projects from trying to destroy the character of the rear of the Charlton Street Row. Hopefully, the quality of the historic character of the 400 block of East Macon Street will be preserved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Paolucci. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Yes, Eric O'Neill again. I just want to thank everybody for coming up and speaking. I respect your opinions and have sympathized with the principles that they are based on. The purpose of this approval process is to determine if this property is allowed to have an addition, which it is, and then if the proposed design is adequately addressing the visual compatibility factors and the design standards listed in the zoning ordinance. So the MPC staff, preservation staff, has reviewed this thoroughly, as well as the HSF members, and both have determined that it unconditionally has met all the design standards in the ordinance. So I would like to ask that the board respect their efforts, but if there is objection to any of those conclusions, I'd be happy to try to speak to some of the specifics of the design standards you think are not met.
Thank you. Sorry, that was just the response to public comment. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. No further public comment will be had. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I think that given this is a row, makes it different from it being a standalone property with an elevator shaft, just like many others downtown. The historic nature of the row, the removal of the historic fabric is an issue. I'm not really sure how you can store masonry in an attic. I find that unrealistic. So I would say the reversibility factor of this is not realistic. Storing windows, yes. Storing masonry in an attic is just not. I do think by removing those three windows, you thoroughly change the back of this house and you break up the whole row, which is, it's an issue. I don't know how HSF doesn't see it that way, but, I think that breaking up the historic row is a problem. And lastly, I think this is a unique situation because of the fact that there's no lane. So these houses back up to all those houses on Macon. If it were a typical situation where there's that lane there and the carriage house, there's a point of buffer, but there is no buffer here. You're changing the entire view of all the houses on Macon that front to it. So I am thoroughly against this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Higgins.
First of all, totally agree with everything that was just said. I know this street very well. I've walked it many, many times. The uniformity of the facade, not so much the windows because there are little decks and changes in windows and that sort of thing, but the overall row idea is so important. I also am not convinced that this cannot be put inside. And the gentleman who lives on the same row that has an elevator, as does one of his neighbors, and those are both inside. Well, I know we need to consider accessibility factors, especially as we are an aging society. But it needs, I don't see any reason it cannot go inside except it's not convenient. It seems more convenient, which yes, you can go ahead and ask to put an addition on the rear. That's everyone's right. But is it visually compatible? No. I do not find it visually compatible, and I also am opposed to this.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Rowan?
You know, sometimes elevators just aren't, these homes aren't conducive to adding an elevator to them. And I agree with the previous comments. That row of homes, it's so beautiful, and Macon Street is not a lane, and there are no carriage houses. So I just don't think that it's visually compatible with the rest of the homes on that row.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Hull.
Sounds like I'm piling on, but the proposal certainly interrupts, as I asked when we first started, if there was any other interruptions on that block, and the answer was no. This interrupts the flow and is visually not compatible with whatever else is going on there. In addition, as Mr. Higgins has mentioned in previous meetings, storing historic products in the attic releases them from any sort of control that we might have to say put them back. Once they're in the attic, they are no longer under the board's review, and they could disappear, and we would have no authority to do anything about it. So I would not at all support approval of this petition.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. I will just add my comments for the record, since it seems clear that the board is leaning a certain way. I appreciate that this is a special situation, but there definitely is a front and a rear facade of this building, although it is unique because it faces a street. And so I think when examining and staff's examination of Secretary of the Interior standards for additions, and also the consideration of increasing accessibility of historic buildings, I certainly see where this is a difficult and potentially split decision. But I will lend to my fellow board members' opinions and thoughts, and I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel. Mr. Higgins.
No further comment.
I just want to say that I appreciate all the neighbors' efforts in making that whole row beautiful with the fig vine, and it doesn't feel like you're looking at the back of a home.
So. Mr. Houle.
No further comments.
Thank you. At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review deny the petition number 24-004954. Thank you. 422 East Charlton Street, based on the incompatibility of the project as outlined or as discussed.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. There's a motion. Could you clarify your motion just for the record?
On visual compatibility as discussed.
Thank you. The motion on the floor is to deny the petition based on the visual compatibility standard not being met. Is there a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
That motion is denied. Next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Wabena Architects, file number 23-005347 for 409 West Taylor Street. New construction, small part two design details.
So obviously y'all know this project very well at this point. This is part two of the project. Part one, the demolition of the existing building, was approved over the summer. And now they're coming back for the final approvals on the project. So staff believes that the bulk of what was provided does meet the standards in this case. There were these three conditions that were put on the approval. One was to receive approval for the encroachment of that front porch. They did pull the porch in just enough to meet those requirements, but they need the formal approval from the city. The second is to provide information about the gates, fencing, and similar elements around the parking and the trash. Applicant provides several plans for the parking lot, which it sounds like has been approved by the city. We just need that additional information. And the final is with regards to a possible rooftop deck, like the Tatnall Street project. Pergolas rooftop decks are not allowed from street-facing facades. The plans show that the rooftop is accessible from the penthouse, so we just need additional information of what's been put up there and if it's visible from the street. If it is, it needs to be pulled in so it's no longer visible. With that, staff recommends approval of the new construction small part two for the three-story structure with a penthouse at 409 West Taylor with the conditions that are seen on the screen. Does the board have any questions?
I just have one, which is about the transoms over the French doors with the Juliet balcony. Are they flush or are the French doors inset?
I believe the French doors are inset, but you can ask the applicant if he's online.
Who will have one question? This is probably the wrong meeting. I should have asked this whenever it came before, but since this is new construction, why does the structure have to have a porch that extends into the public right of way? It's not like it's a remodel job.
That's something they should ask the applicant. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for him, but you should ask him.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly.
He may be online. I'm not sure. So,
do we have the petitioner online?
Hey there, this is James Wibina, architect of record. Can y'all hear me?
Barely.
Can you get a little loud, please?
Well, let me see if I can adjust that. So to answer the question, those French doors are inset so that there will be at least 3 inches inset from the face of the brick, and so will the transoms. I think it was a modeling error on the transom itself is why they look like they're projected out further than the actual French doors. When it comes to the entry stoop, the existing building had a much more a deeper encroachment for the stairs that are being removed. The building's being removed. Actually, I think that ship has already sailed. They've removed it. So what we're doing is we've applied for the encroachment, and we believe it meets we meet the standards for the encroachment. And the building, if we had to, if they deny it, then, you know, obviously we can pull it in. I think we are only a foot into the sidewalk. So we can fix that if we have to. And I believe we worked with staff over the last few weeks as far as colors and materials. There is a roof deck, but it's surrounded by a 42-inch parapet. So there will be no visual link from the street to the roof deck itself. And then we do have the penthouse, which basically has an office in it on the fourth floor, which is a fraction of the actual footprint of the main building. So, but we do appreciate the staff's work with us and would like to get it approved so we can move to permitting.
Thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner? Okay. Is there a member of the public that wishes to comment?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC would like to reiterate our same comments that we made during the part one review regarding the visual compatibility of the Juliet balconies on the north facade, especially the one located on the ground level, and the transom windows over the doors, whereas these features are not common in this area. We do appreciate the use of the masonry, the banding, and the detailing at the cornice line. However, we think the porch detailing is still in need of further study as well.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion, and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
I'm still a little bit concerned about the encroachment of the front porch, especially when he said that the encroachment was only about a foot. But if the body that makes that decision says it's okay, then I guess I would be all right with it. Other than that, I think I would also like to have the issue addressed about the design of the porch, as mentioned by the Historic Savannah Foundation. Because it looks like from the drawing that was up just a minute ago, it looks rather plain and nondescript. Other than that, I would be okay with it.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Rowan?
I agree with Mr. Houle's comments about the porch.
Mr. Higgins?
I agree with the comments about the porch. I also still have some challenges with the French doors and the transoms and the balcony. It just isn't visually pleasing. Or I find them challenging. Would I oppose the overall? No, but I really wish staff would work with the commissioner on that element, because it's such a strong element on the facade. I mean, it's just a little jarring.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ms. Nagel?
I agree with the comments made. The front porch from a design perspective does it is rather underwhelming. If the encroachment of the porch is not within our say, then like Mr. Hull said, then that's that. That would be my only issue with it, would be that. Other than that, I think it meets the criteria.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Hull.
No more comments.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No additional.
Ms. Nagel?
No.
All right, thank you. At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to petition 23-005347, 409 West Taylor Street. Approve the new construction small part two with the three staff comments and the addition of a fourth, which is staff continue to work with the petitioner to refine the design of the porch, Juliet balconies, transom, and French doors.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to approve with the staff conditions with the recommendation of a fourth, which would be to refine the design of the Juliet balconies and the transom windows to make it, and the porch, sorry, and the front porch. Do I have a second?
Hull second.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. How do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Thank you. The ayes have it. That motion is approved with the aforementioned conditions. Before we go on to staff review, I had a clarification on procedure for when there is a public comment or objection to one of the staff reviews.
Hi, everybody. Before I get started, and you won't have to amend your motion, but when we gave you the date for 2025, we gave you the date for Historic Preservation Commission, not HTBR. So the correct date is January the 8th. We've already told the applicant, as well as some of the petitioner, the audience that was here, and we'll also make note on our webpage as well. So I wanted to make sure that was clear for the record.
Thank you.
The way that the staff review process works is that when, you know, we meet with the applicant, we ask them to come in before. Once that happens, they submit their application, and staff looks at it. Staff recommends approval. If there is an appeal, the appeal can go two ways. Someone can come in and say, I don't agree with it, and they can appeal it to me. Or they could make the decision that they want to appeal it to you as the board. So that's basically what that process is. We are notified by the public that they want to have an appeal. And based on what the appeal is, I generally, if it's something that's pretty straightforward, you know, like someone is painting their house pink and it's part of the paint list, and it's pink and it's part of the paint list, and you might not like it, but that's what's on the list. So I would deal with that. But if it's something bigger, I think it's going to be controversial, I always send it up to the board. I think that those decisions should be made by the board in a public forum. But that's basically what the process is. If the item is referred to you, then the staff would make a staff report for that meeting, and you would make the final decision. The staff reviews that you get as notice for these meetings is basically not for you to approve them. It's just basically letting you know, hey, we reviewed these, and these are applications that we've approved. So I wanted to be really clear about that. But that's what the process is, and I'll be glad to share that with you all if you'd like to have a copy of that. But that's in our documents as well. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
So procedurally, if I am a neighbor and I object to a staff, what do I do? Do I come before this board to appeal it? Is there a notification procedure?
No. If someone gets approval and you see something go up and you says, I don't agree with that, then what happens is that someone can come in and say they can send an email or write a letter to me if they want to appeal it to me. Generally, that's what would happen. And then I would look at it to see, is this really something that's, you know, large enough to come to you as a board? If it's not, then I basically will sit down with the applicant as well as the person that's aggrieved and hear what their issues and concerns are to see if there's any way to work that out. But that's basically what has been done when people have had concern in the past when they found out that someone was issued a COA by staff review. If it's something that's big and they send an email saying, I totally disagree, this is why I disagree, and it's information that we might not have, because sometimes that happens, then we would basically stop whatever is going on and do a staff report and put it on the next agenda for this board to hear.
Thank you for that. So with regard to the question that came up today, mm-hmm. where there was a member of the public that wanted to see more specific information, if this board is happy for the staff to review that information, do we just approve it as is, or how would you pull it out if it needed?
Basically, the staff has already reviewed it. If Mr. Jones wants to appeal it, he can come and talk to me, and I would send it up to you if I think it's something that we can't resolve, but it's not something that warrants coming to this level, because I think he just wants to see the detail, at least from my understanding. We have a lot of stuff going on today. I was listening to the weather and things of that nature, and listening to this as well at the same time. But, you know, if he wants to see that, we can show him the information that we have. But, you know, the applicant, just because he contacts the applicant is not obligated to show him anything. He can if he'd like, but he's not obligated to. He can come in and talk to us if he wants to.
So his recourse is with you, not with us.
Excuse me?
His recourse is with you, not with us.
His recourse would be with me first, and then again, if he's not happy, then, you know, it would come to you.
Okay. Thank you. Is that clear for everyone?
Yes, except retroactively, because I know of another case that was brought before us about a window change on a carriage house on Gwinnett Street,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of brought all this up. Would that individual come to you?
Yes, but the question becomes, in all fairness to the person that's applying for the COA that is approvable by staff review, we have a set of performance standards. If people meet those performance standards and guidelines, then they're approved. That's why they're staff review. We follow that, and, you know, there's some small judgment made, but usually there's not a lot of deviation from that. If someone has already put the windows in and staff has gone through doing the review, you can appeal it. But the question becomes, if it's been there for 6 months, you know, can you do it? No.
This is on a building that hasn't even been built yet.
Oh, if it's not been built yet, then yeah, you can.
Are there any other questions on this topic?
Chairman, may I clarify some facts that are relevant?
I think that you're going to have to take that up with Melanie outside of this meeting.
Yeah.
We have already applied for two appeals, which have not been heard. Jim spoke to Mr. Mellon prior to September.
Again, I don't want to get into this in our meeting. It's not.
Communicated to Mr. Mellon that I want to appeal to him. He is Melanie's.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
I'll be glad to talk to you.
As soon as possible. Right now, we have no choice but to appeal to the CBA. We would rather we were appealing your approvals without even looking at the application. We have no choice but to go to that next
Mr. time. Jones, the question has been asked and answered. There's procedurally for this board and for me and for our ability to make decisions. Once a staff decision is rendered and a COA is issued, there's no recourse with us in this forum. It needs to be dealt with at the staff level. And I'm sure, I'm hopeful that y'all can come to some sort of resolution. And I would encourage staff to work with you to achieve that. But you can't ask us to do something that we don't have the procedure or the ability or the authority to do. The advice that we're being given by the director of the organization that we serve under is contrary to that.
And basically, I'm looking at what the process is. So I'll be glad to talk to you. You want to talk today? I'll talk to you today. But that's basically what the process is. And we try to follow that. You know, does this warrant going to BZA? I don't even know if that would be the case, because it's kind of like, what would you appeal to them?
Yes, just please keep us in the loop.
So I'll keep you in the loop.
We want to make sure that
if
there is a concern that it is being addressed and that it's going through the proper channels and that we are aware of what those channels are.
I'm sure that if he is not happy, if Mr. Jones is not happy, he's going to
I have no doubt he will speak up.
Want to come and speak to the board based on what we've decided, but that's what the process is, and it's part of the ordinance. This is what the process is.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Clear as mud. So getting back to the list of approved staff reviews, we have a vote of acknowledgement, and I will entertain a motion on that.
Madam Chair, what I see the first petition is number 16. What's the last one? 21.
Yes,
21. I would move that the board
continue.
I would move that the board approve the staff reviews 16 through 21.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. All those in favor? Any opposed? Staff reviews are acknowledged and approved. Moving on is we don't have any work performed without a certificate. That's a miracle. No items that have been deferred to staff. Under notices and proclamations and acknowledgments, there are a list of inspections completed by staff and stamped drawings. Under other business, I did want to put into the public record that there has been training that has been scheduled for October 30th that is mandatory for all board members. There has been a request made by the chair for alternatives to that date in the case of conflict. I also wanted to correct a comment that I made in pre-meeting where I said that October 30th was not one of the original dates proposed. It was, in fact, one of the dates proposed. It just happened to be a date that I could not attend. So I wanted to just make that correction. But the point is that this training has been scheduled, and if board members have a conflict and cannot make it, we're requesting that an alternative be offered. Also under old business, we understand that there is a decision that has gone to appeal for a second time of one of our decisions for the Jones Street property on the corner of Jones and Barnard, and we would like a status update on that.
So I believe,
and Jessica's here too. So if that needs to come from Jessica, I'm happy to.
That will be going.
Whoever wants to give it to us, we're happy to hear.
Yes, I believe the next step is it will be going to the Zoning Board of Appeals in October. I can get you the exact date. So this is, you know, the history there of that one. But we'll send you an update. We'll email you after the meeting when it's scheduled for.
Okay, and then can we get a copy of the appeal as well?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yep.
And then
we have time.
I'm already on my horse, so I'm just ride it out.
Yeah.
A clarification of that process when something gets appealed and how that notification happens.
Yes.
It seems like we haven't quite nailed that down, or we have, and we're going to do that moving forward?
Yes, we're definitely going to, both you and the HPC, when an appeal is filed, it will be sent to the chair. So you would receive it, and Darren for HPC would receive it, so that everybody is aware of what's going on.
Okay.
Yep, that's my understanding. I'm sure we can send it to everybody, but I think Sally may have sent it directly to you for that one. But
I will certainly share it when I get it, if I get it.
We don't get a lot of them, but yes, we can send them. It's not a problem to have everybody get it. I think it was just the way it had started. So,
is there anything else under old or new business to be discussed? Jonathan, did you have something for us?
No, just thank you as always for your time.
Okay. Well, with that, I will adjourn.
Have a good day.